Okay, so continuing at Torah versus heresy, we're going to do Perek Vav, only five psukim this week. But like they have, they're a little bit complex, and they're going to be multiple layers of analysis. So I imagine it'll take us the entire time. This is really, I think Perek Vav is where you really get to see just how committed Rashi is to learning these first 10 Prakim of Mishlei as like one continuum. And it's like really all part of this one story, the mashal of the two women back and forth, because he really has to work very hard here. And also what we'll see next week with the whole mashal of the ant, how it's like, you know, because it's really very beautiful how the Midrashim work it out, that it really flows from what we did prior, you know, the prior psukim, you know, Prakim comes afterwards. But this is really where almost what you would learn as Pshat really deviates far from how the Midrashic interpretation that we're going to go with. We're going to do both. We're going to try to learn on both levels. Like Rashi says in Perek Aleph, don't forget about the Melitza. Don't forget about the basic Pshat. And we'll try to tie them together to show why Shlomo Melch uses this Pshat for the Mashal, for the Nimshal. But these Pshatim are really going to be in a sense, difficult in that regards. Okay. The psukim on the pshat level are complicated. Forget about the mashal. Okay. So let us see these five psukim that we're going to do tonight, starting from pasuk vav aleph. Okay. So it says, Bini, im arafta lere'echa, takata lezar kapecha. So my son, if you've guaranteed for your friend, like a rav on is like a guarantee, right? Like you guarantee a loan or something like that. Takata lezar kapecha. So you like stuck out your hand to a stranger or for a stranger. Okay. So I guess that lends itself to two interpretations here, right? So you made a guarantee for your friend. You've stuck out your hand to a stranger. Okay, which on the most basic level, we're going to start off. It's like you guarantee a loan. You sign on the loan for one of your friends, and you shake hands with the lender on behalf of your friend. Okay, strange. Like, what the heck does this have to do with what we've been talking about? Right, nothing. Pasuk beis. Nokashta b'mefecha. You've become ensnared with the words of your mouth. Nilkanata b'mreficha, you've become trapped through the words of your mouth. Okay. Ase zos efo b'ni v'hinatzel. So do this thing, my son, and be saved. Kibasa b'chafreicha, because you have come into the palm of your friend or the hand. The palm of your friend. Lech hisrapes. A hard word to translate. The pshat that Rashi learns is go and open up your hand, open up your palm. Urahav re'echa. And increase your friends. Al titein shein aleinecha, pasuk dalet, right? Don't give sleep to your eyes, usinu malafa pecha, or slumber to your eyelids. Hinatzel kitzvi miyad, so be saved like a deer immediately, ukitzipor miyad yakush, and like a bird from the trap. Okay. Right? That's something else he's checking. Okay? And if you were with us last week, it's just, what does this have to do with anything? If you've been past, you know, past, 10 times, it was just totally, these psukim are out of the blue. Okay? So again, we're going to look, learn it pshat first, according to Rashi. Again, the pshat, the Gemara, basically, in Bava Basra learns pshat, and I think, if I recall, I think we did it this year, and Yuma maybe even brings it up. Okay, but okay. So the key psukim are really the first three psukim. You know, the last two psukim, pasuk dal and pasuk hey, just to simplify things for a second for us, pasuk dal and pasuk hey are just saying, don't give any sleep, save yourself immediately, right? It's basically what pasuk dal and pasuk hey are saying, right? You got to be, get out of there, get out of there. There's a trap, and don't sleep, don't rest until you get can extricate yourself from the trap, okay? So the key psukim, those are dalet and hey, and no matter which pshat we learn, pasuk dal and hey are essentially saying, there's a trap here, get out right away. You can't wait. The key psukim is pasuk aleph beis and gimel. What are they talking about? Right? You guaranteed for your friend. You stuck out your hand for a stranger. You've become entrapped or ensnared by what you've said. Do this and be safe because you've come into your friend's hand. Go open up your hand. Increase your friends. Right? What's it talking about? Okay. So Rashi like this. Pasuk aleph. Bini ime rafta. Arvus mamon. Kimashma. Okay, so the simple pshat is talking about you made a guarantee, a monetary guarantee for somebody, right? Pirshu Rabbah saying that's a chazal learning in Bava Basra. Okay. Okay, so you've basically guaranteed something and you shook on it to a stranger. The stranger, I guess, is the creditor, right? The creditor is the stranger. And for your buddy, your friend, you've guaranteed his loan. In order that he should get a loan, you made a guarantee to some stranger that you'll be on the hook for the loan if your buddy can't pay back the loan. Okay. Skip Pasuk Beis now. There's a Rashi. Skip Pasuk Beis for a second because Pasuk Beis is going to be something else the way Pshat is. This is Chazal. Don't blame Rashi. Okay. Pasuk Gimel is Aseh Zoseh Fubinivin Natsel Kivasa Kavarecha Lechis Rapis. What does it mean? Lechis Rapis. Hatelo Pas Yad. So open up the palm of your hand. So you made a guarantee for your buddy. Apparently your buddy defaulted on the loan. Okay. You've guaranteed it to the stranger. Go pay up. Pay up. Okay. Urahavri Echa. So what is the Urahavri Echa? The end of Pasuk Gimel. What is it doing? What does it mean? Increase friends. Now, Vim'in Lamamun Imcha. And if what's going on, okay, if what's going on has nothing to do with a monetary situation, that's not what's going on, okay? Ella, there's a totally different phenomenon going on. Case B, okay? Case A was a guarantee made for your friend to a stranger, go pay up. Or there's a new scenario, scenario B, which has nothing to do with money, nothing to do with that. Ella, shenokashte b'mirficha ledaber lo kashos. You made a mistake, you said something, well, you said something insulting to your friend. So then increase the number of friends you have in order to get him to forgive you. Okay. So, you know, make a shura, like a benadim l'chavero. You said something to your friend, you really insulted him, and he doesn't want to be mochel you. So there's a halacha, you have to do a shura, right? You get three people, three times, ask him to be forgive you. And the fact that other people are asking your behalf, whether those people are your friends or his friends, sounds like they're from this pasuk or havre echa, they're your friends, that they're interceding for you, that they're going to him and say, listen, you know, this guy's not such a bad guy. You should forgive him. He didn't mean it. Okay. So basically what is going on is in terms of the basic pshat, these psuk and mishnah are combining two totally different mistakes. One mistake is you made a loan for your friend and to some creditor, stranger, and now your friend didn't pay the loan. Now the creditor's coming after you, so it's saying you should go pay up. And scenario two is, or you've insulted your friend, and now he's really mad at you and he doesn't want to be mochel you, so it's advising you to go get your friends, increase your friends, get a bunch of friends to intercede on your behalf to get your friend to be mochel you, you know, because he won't be mochel you directly. Okay, that is the basic shot, right? And in both cases, it's advising you to do it quickly and don't sleep, don't rest until you either pay up the creditor or you get this shura, this group of friends to intercede on your behalf. Okay? So far, so good? Okay, good question, Leslie. So Leslie's asking why do you have to, just because you insulted somebody, so why do you have to do this thing right away, your havreyecha, try to get mechila right away. Why is that so essential? Don't rest, don't sleep. So I think it's like when you've insulted somebody, So it's like, look, it's, you know, people, this happens. You've said something stupid, you've insulted somebody. But the way it works is very often these things, if you take care of them right away, if you ask for mechila right away, or, and if he's not going to be mochel because he's too insulted, if you at least get friends to intercede, you find some way to repair the relationship right away, it can be repaired right away. It could be, if you take care of it. But if you let it fester and you let it grow and get out of control, then eventually, like, the it just becomes like the relationship becomes dysfunctional, and the feelings of hatred build and of being slighted. And, you know, there are people who just, like, end up not talking to each other the rest of their lives for years because somebody said something inappropriate to them, and they never really were too stubborn or too proud to ask for forgiveness. And as a result of that, like, it just grew more and more bitter, the relationship, until it was basically couldn't be repaired, you know, and relationships have been lost forever. You know, I think fairly frequently for people who, because people are stubborn and proud and they don't ask for forgiveness right away. And by the time they realize they should ask for forgiveness, it's really too late. So that's a really an expression of something that if you deal with it right away, it's capable, more often than not, you're capable of really repairing a relationship that goes awry. But if you wait and you let it sit, years later, it's like too late. Nobody even knows, you know, there's people don't even know why they're fighting, why they don't like each other. And it's over time, the more and more reasons build up why they're fighting, why they hate each other. And then you can't just ask forgiveness for that thing you said. It's just like way too late. The whole relationship is deteriorated to the point where it doesn't exist, and there's no longer a possibility of forgiveness or repairing it. Well, how do you dealt with it the next week, the next month, even the next year? You know, maybe you had a chance. But if you sleep on it and you know, I wonder if it has the impression of don't even wait to the next day, just deal with it right away. Don't even let it go overnight. As soon as you recognize you made a mistake, just try to ask for mechila. Don't delay it at all. The longer you delay, the worse it gets and the more difficult it becomes to repair the relationship. So let me go into the mashal aspect, and then we'll come back and we'll try to discuss all three. We kind of analyzed a little bit this one. We skipped over the Arvas Mamon one. But let me do the mashal one, and then I'll analyze all three of them together. Okay. So Rashi like this, Davar Acher. So this is how on the level that's going to connect to the, because what we discussed now has nothing to do with anything, right? In terms of the general flow of the first 10 prakim. But now Rashi is going to give the pshat that fits in. It says, Bini me'raftarecha. So if you guarantee to your friend, Acher shenaseisa ariv lakash baruchu. So once you become, you may become like a guarantor to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shehu, so Hashem is your friend. Kidechsev, so this is my beloved, this is my friend. So that's talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, right? There's also another pasuk Rashi often quotes, the Gemara quotes, is Lamana Chai V'Re'ai. You know, Chai V'Re'ai, it's talking about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Or he's talking about us, I forgot. But either way, there's a Kadosh Baruch Hu as a din of a friend, right? There's also, I think, a Rashi, B'haftal Arecha Kamocha, is talking about Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so there you see in the Midrashim, God has a din of being a friend of a person. So after you made a guarantee to a Kadosh Baruch Hu, you were a guarantor to him. You made a guarantee to him. V'kibalta lecha b'sinai b'arvas mo'av. B'alo b'shua l'shma mitzvosav, you made a guarantee to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And you accept it upon yourself at Har Sinai. That was the first bris of the Torah at Har Sinai. And again at Arvas Moav in Sefer Dvarim. But Allah Bishvua, right? You made a swear, it was an oath. You swore to keep the mitzvos. And Allah with severe consequences, right? There was curses. There's the Tochacha, right? There was, and we accepted that, the Eila Devrei Bris. Right, that Klai Yisrael did on that, and then Parshas, I guess, Bechukosai, and then again in Kisavo, Ba'ala B'Shvu, with all the curses and all the terrible things that happen if we break the mitzvahs, and you guarantee to HaKadosh Baruch Hu that you swore to him that you were going to keep his Torah and his mitzvahs, and if not, there's going to be severe, awful, terrible consequences. Then, Takanta Lazar Kapecha, Shetasha V'Tasa Midrachav, and now you're going to turn away, like remove yourself from before God and turn away from his ways, and you're going to cling to the minim, to the apikarsim, and you're going to go in their ways, right? So that's how they read the first pasuk, pasuk aleph. B'dinyan l'rav t'l'recha, you made a guarantee to your friend. Now you're going to stick out your hand and you're going to go attach yourself to a bunch of minim and apikarsim. You're going to abandon a Kadosh Baruch Hu, right? You made a whatchamacall, right? You made a promise, a swear, an oath. No kashta b'mreficha. So you really stumbled. You've become entrapped with the words of your mouth. Shetakata kaf im hazarim. So you become ensnared through your words of your mouth. I think the way Rashi is learning this means the words of your mouth is referring to the shvuah, and you become ensnared. That shvuah that you've made, but all of a shvuah with the curses in the shvuah, the imrei ficha. So now you become ensnared with it once you went and you went and attached yourself to the minim and to strangers of Avodah Zarah. You've abandoned Kadosh Baruch Hu. That imrei ficha, that shvuah and Allah that you made, really becomes a trap for yourself. You laid a trap for yourself. You made a promise. You didn't have to promise. Okay, a couple of market gigas. Forget that a second. But you made a promise. You made an oath. You made a guarantee. And there's consequences. That was imrei ficha. And now you went and abandoned it. Now you went in and violated that shvuah with all these crazy consequences on it. Okay. So that's pasuk beis. Pasuk gimel. Asay zos efo b'nivi natzel. So do this, my son, and be saved. Holu basa b'kaf re'echa b'sinai. Once you've basically come into Kadosh Baruch Hu's hand at Har Sinai, the kibalt Elohu Elohu so alecha, and you've accepted his that he's your God, right? You've accepted it, and you're like in a sense at his mercy. I'm not sure. Basar kafreacha means either you're at his mercy, like you came into his hand by promising, and now you're at his basically you're underneath his control, what he wants to do with you, or it means whole basar kafreacha b'Sinai, since he means you came into a relationship with him. You created a relationship with Akash Baruch Hu at Sinai. I think that's what it means. And you're makabel his malchus, his elohu so alecha. Okay, and now you got this problem because you got to get saved here. You got to save yourself because you've accepted his elohus. You made a swear. There's an Allah and there's a consequences. And now you've gone and abandoned him and betrayed him and you've gone to mean him and apikarsim. Leich hisrapes. Hikana lefanov, so humble yourself in front of him. Kiaskupa hanir peses v'anidreses. So humble yourself before him like a threshold that's like tread upon and stepped on. Okay, so like lower yourself to become like a door, like the door threshold that everybody steps upon. Okay, like total humbling and breaking your ego in front of him. Okay, urave re'acha, harbe re'em, increase your friends. She is palu alecha lefanav. So get friends, ask your friends to daven for you in front of Hashem. Okay, is basically get your friends to daven for you and ask God to forgive you. Okay, we'll take that up in a second, why you have to ask your friends to daven for you. Okay. And just the last pasuk, kinatzel ketzvi miyad, maher, quickly, hishamit misham, escape from there, ketzvi hanimel miyad adam, like a deer escaping from a person. But again, pasuk I think is going in all three cases. Okay, so that's how the Medrash reads. The Medrash reads the psukim, it's talking about one sin, it's not a combination of two sins, like the pshat is. The Medrash is saying that basically, you got to realize here, right, it's the context of what's going on. The prior 2 weeks we've been doing the worrying about the Isha Zona. She's trying to lure you, Minas of the Zara. They're attractive, and the young man is he's looking for something new and exotic and exciting, and he's tempted to give up on his Isha's Nerecha, the Torah, his wife of his youth, who is has been good to him. The Torah has been good to him, but he's bored. He's a little bored, and the Isha Zona is exciting, and he wants to betray the Torah. And these psukim are dealing with what does a person do if he's abandoned Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's betrayed the Torah, and he's gone over to the Isha Zona, and he's made a mistake, and now he realizes he made a mistake and he wants to come back. That's what these psukim are talking about, okay? And And what's fascinating about these psukim is I think it really is developing. We discussed this, you know, a few weeks ago in Perek Beis, where it says, Koba lo yeshuv and lo yisigor chos chayim. It was Perek Beis Pasuk Yates, where it says, every person who goes to the Isha Zona, that was, I think, the first time, or maybe the second, first time we met the Isha Zara, that it says, like, you know, there's there's an inclined path to her, or the decline rather. It's you're falling down, and once you go there, there's a path of no return. But now it's basically showing you, and Rashi there says it's kasha lefros, it's very difficult. Nearly, you know, it becomes more and more difficult the further in you go. But here it's really showing you that there is a possibility of escaping. There's a possibility of escaping if you do it soon. And it's trying to lay out a path for you of how you could return to a Kadosh Baruch Hu after you've betrayed him. And in the context, you have to appreciate the that's one of the things, appreciate what you did, the severity of the betrayal. And the reason it basically it's saying is that a Jew is not like a non-Jew. See, a non-Jew worships Avodah Zarah, okay, it's bad. Non-Jew Shemitz B'nei Noach, it's not a good thing. Chayav Misa, it's Aser, philosophically terrible. But it doesn't have the same thing. It doesn't have the same element of betrayal of a covenant between him and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the Bnei Yisrael at Sinai, you know, and we're all bound by that. Eish Asher Einenu Po Hayom. We're all bound, you know, Eish Asher Yeshnu Po, Eish Asher Einenu Po. Whether those that were at Har Sinai and the children were not there, it was a bond, it was an oath, it was a shvuah and an Allah of a nation, and we're part of that nation. And you are bound by the shvuah and Allah of Har Sinai. And Klal Yisrael, and when Klal Yisrael deviates from the Torah, it has a din of betrayal of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, because we made a deal. It wasn't just the philosophical, rational demand to recognize a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It was, you have to look at it as a guarantee. You gave your word, and you were bound by an oath. And it was to somebody who's been good to you. It's like you have to look at Har Sinai as you made an oath to a friend, somebody who trusted you, and you trust him, and you have a deal, and you have a relationship with him. There's a relationship that was created at Har Sinai. Because we were Mekabel Elohusa, we were Mekabel Kadosh Baruch Hu as our God, and he accepted us as an Am Segula, and there became a relationship. A relationship ensued from Har Sinai. And when Bnei Yisrael, or when a Jew goes and abandons the Torah and clings to Minas and things that deny the essence of the Torah, the essence of that relationship between God, it's not like a non-Jew doing it. It's a betrayal of your relationship to God. It's a betrayal of your guarantee. It's a violation of the oath, and it's much more severe, and it carries with it much more severe consequences. And you got to realize you're in real trouble, because like the pasuk we did last week, Kinochach Enei Hashem Darkei Ish V'chol Ma'agalos of Mefales. Kadosh Baruch Hu sees what you're doing, and this is not something that he ignores. It's one thing when a guy does it, nothing when a Jew does it. He doesn't overlook the minas and the vodazar of a Jew the same way he tolerates the vodazar of a guy, because it's not a stab in the back. It's not a betrayal of a Kadosh Baruch Hu when a guy does it. When a Jew does it, it carries that element. And so it destroys the relationship between God. It has that particular problem more so, and it carries with it more severe consequences because of the Allah. And therefore, essentially, so you realize it's worse, and it prescribes for you the path. The path is twofold, okay? One is to humble yourself and to break down your ego in front of God. That's really the first element that has to be there, is if you want God to accept you back, there has to be a total removal of the ego and the self, and essentially begging God, breaking yourself, lowering yourself before him. You cannot come back to God with any amount of gaiva. And this is why why you have to realize why it's so impossible so difficult for a person to do tshuva once you go to Minas. It's not easy for a person to do this. And you have to humble yourself before God, and you have to be marben reyim. You can't even daven yourself. The person who's betrayed a Kadosh Baruch Hu, he's unable to daven because for a few reasons. One is he can't daven himself because like the nature of like tefillah is a relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what tefillah is. You're going lifnei Hashem and you're standing before him and you're speaking to him on a certain, in a certain, with a certain relationship. A person who doesn't have a relationship with God isn't really able to engage in tefillah in a proper way. And the nature, it's not like when a person eats chazer or he does one or the other. Like even Rashi says, arayos, right? The pshat in the Mishnah, just arayos. It's just another chait. It's an aveira. But it doesn't undermine your relationship to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. It doesn't break down that the whole relationship, the fabric of the relationship, any of the other sins. When a person is minos and he abandons the Torah and he betrays the relationship with God, the whole relationship is screwed up. There is no relationship before. So he's not able to go in daven anymore. He loses the ability to do tshuva and to be mispalo of Nei Hashem because he doesn't have a relationship with God that he can make recourse to. Psychologically, he's unable. He's unable and capable. He's not fit to be mispalo b'derech ritzoy in an appeasing way. And therefore, he has to ask his friends to do it. And also, it's like part of the humbling yourself to go before God is when that person who's abandoned the Torah, part of he abandons the Torah is because he thinks he's better than the Torah, he thinks he knows more, his taiva's got a hold of him. So part of breaking down that ego and going before God is like when he goes to his friends and he asks his friends to daven to Hashem for him. Say, I made a mistake, I abandoned the Torah, I was wrong, I want to come back. Can you daven to Hashem that you should accept my tshuva? That's really, I mean, of all the things that really breaks a person's ego, that would really, I think, humble the person and really helps him really acknowledge publicly to all his friends that what he did was wrong and he's made a mistake and he wants to do tshuva and he wants, you know, them to intercede on his behalf. So I think that's the two reasons why he needs to ask his friends to daven for him. One is because he can't daven. He's not capable. He's been so distorted from the meanest, number one. And number two, the relationship with God doesn't exist. You know, those two components. And then the third thing is that it's part of the humility. It's part of the humbling himself in terms of his way back is by telling everybody made a mistake, daven to Hashem for me. And basically the advice is to do this immediately. Because the longer a person goes down the path of Minas, the longer he hangs out with that Bikaris and the longer he abandons the Torah, the more difficult and difficult it becomes to ever change and to abandon the Minas and come back to Kadosh Baruch Hu. The more fixed he gets, the longer his ego becomes fixed to his rebellion and it becomes, you know, Kobayla Yeshuv and it becomes near impossible. I don't want to say impossible, it becomes more and more difficult. The longer you go, the harder and harder it gets to do tshuva. And that's why you got to do it immediately. Okay, so Naomi is asking the question of, isn't there a halacha that if the chayt is ben adam lamakom, ashrei mechas pesha, that you're supposed to cover up, I think it's a pasuk in Mishlei, but you're supposed to cover up the chayt, you're not supposed to publicize it because it creates like a chil Hashem. Yeah, I think there's like machlokas how to exactly to learn that. But I know, for example, the Ravid holds that if it's if the chait was public, even if it's been adam lamakom, just like you're mefarshing the chait, you're mefarshing the tshuva. So I would think in general, when a person goes off to minas and abandons the Torah, in general, that's fairly public. People know about that. Your friends know about that. So just like your friends knew that you abandoned the Torah, your friends should know that you've regretted it and you made a mistake and you want them to daven to Hashem for you to be forgiven. But I would agree, I think probably everybody would agree, if the minas was totally private, where like a person had doubts in their own mind or they don't believe, but they kept the Torah, but they never actually did anything, at least that anybody else knows about, then this probably wouldn't apply. Then you're better off not letting other people know about it. That's like a chil Hashem, to let other people know about it. I think of a person, see, that's already a person who didn't quite go off the person who has enough appreciation for the Torah and for God, not to commit a chil Hashem and to keep it private, even if they have ideas that they're a minus, you know, those types of ideas in their mind, but they have enough sense not to publicize it, not to let other people know, not to harm other people by doing any action in front of them that shows that they're, you know, mafka, hefker in the Torah. So that person hasn't quite gone to this degree. That person still cares about Kiddush Hashem, still cares about the Torah and Klal Yisrael. And I don't think they might, I don't think they have to go to the degree of asking, just like they never went to the full degree in the chet, I think the tshuva, they could just do it privately between them and God. And they wouldn't need to do this. They might still need to humble themselves before God. And it's, you know, a person who's a min privately is still a min. But the fact that there's concern, they were medabik, you know, Rashi says here, takanta lezar kapecha. Like this time there was sin where it went to the point where shetashu v'tasu midracha v'tidbak alechas, tidbak b'minim alechas b'darkehim. So you really were dovik in the minim and you went in their ways. It's really where minas, like the Rambam defines in Perek Beis, like the full expression of the min is when you do an avera b'yad rama lahachas. You know, I mean, a person who never does it publicly, b'yad rama lahachas, you know, that's not the full min. The full expression of minas, when a person really hits the point of no return, or where it becomes very difficult to return and really have to engage in this process, is when the minus and the apikarsis leads to a person doing an avera, lahachis biyad rama, where he does an avera simply to spite God, and it's like public, that's what we're talking about. He's davik b'minim midarkeham, he really abandons the Torah completely in action. It's got to be an action. If the minus never gets to the point where it's an action and it's publicly expressed, I don't think it really is qualified for this parsha, this part over here. So that's a good question. Yeah, I don't think it means where the minus was private. I think it means where the minus was public. Then you really have to go through this public process of tshuva and tefillah, asking people to daven for you. Okay. Yeah, I don't want to say impossible. I don't want to say impossible. Because yes, a person does tshuva. The only time really it seems there is a point it seems, you know, the Gemara in Chagiga, I forgot what that means, it's Tesvav or something, it says by Acher, the story by Acher, it says Acher heard a baskel from Acher Yapirgut, from behind the parochas. You know, it's a mashal, but you know, in the heard a voice, a call that said, Shuvu banim shovim, chutz me Acher. Right, so all the children, all the banim, the Jews who went, who were shovim, who were wayward, who abandoned the Torah, right? They all should do tshuva, except for Acher. So there is a type of a person, and even Acher, a mayor tried to get him to do tshuva, you know? So it does seem to be that it's exceptionally rare, the case of an Acher, of somebody who can't do tshuva. An Acher is a specific case. I don't think it means just Acher, but there is a type of person like an Acher. And Acher did the Maisa. Right, he was Boa Lazona on Yom Kippur, on Shabbos, something like that, right? That Gemara Chagiga has it. Which is probably a reference to these parshas in Mishlei, if you think about it, right? But so there is that pasuk, Ko Ba'alo Yeshuvun. So, but I think it means, and I don't think it means impossible, even Acher arguably could have done it, whether he believed he couldn't because of that baskol, Chutz Mi Acher, but everybody else, Shuvu Banim Shovim. It's just that it becomes nearly impossible. It's the longer you go, I'm using the word impossible, I'm qualifying it by nearly impossible because I don't, you know, that I think that idea that you can always do tshuva, it's misleading in this regard. Not, you can always do tshuva, but you got to realize this type of sin of minus, once you abandon the Torah, you don't do tshuva. It doesn't happen. And even if you do tshuva, your life is screwed up. I think it's impossible. I do think it's impossible to do full tshuva. Total tshuva, I think, where you really can get back to the old life, I think that is impossible. That never comes back. Person who goes to Minas and then does tshuva, even if he does can return to the Torah, his head is screwed up. He'll never have the same quality of life as he had originally. That's, I think, is true. But I think it's important to appreciate just how difficult it is to do tshuva in this type of a chet. And you should not trick yourself and fool yourself, in thinking that you can just go down this path a little bit and then at some point later on in life, you'll do tshuva. You go down this path, you don't come back. A person who went down this path, you can tell him you can't come back? No. Shuvu banim shovim, you can always come back, but you can't. You know, there is this balance of people don't come back. It's exceedingly difficult, nearly impossible, once you cross a certain point. There is this point where it's just almost impossible to go to return. And people don't. Is it theoretically impossible? It's not theoretically impossible, but people don't return. So you got to be aware of that fact that nobody returns. But it's not theoretically impossible. Maybe an Acher is, I don't know. So The exact analysis, I don't know. The one thing I'm going to say from here is that that point of no return or nearly impossible to return, it demands a maisa. It demands a maisa lahachis, beminos, where you biyad rama, you do an aver lahachis based on the Rambam, based on this Rashi, based on that Gemara by Achir. It does seem that it's not just thoughts, it's not just doubts, it's not just things, it's where you, and it's not just an avera, l'teyava. It's an avera lahachis, where you do something to spite God, where you're being porik o malchus shemayim, you're rejecting Akash Baruch Hu's malchus, you're rejecting the Torah, and you do it with an action. That's, I think, that point where you've really crossed it and you're really in trouble. And once you cross that, then as soon as you can, you got to do tshuva. You got to get back. Because the longer you wait, the more impossible it becomes. Impossible, not theoretically, but practically. You know, kasha lifrosh. To return.
There's a certain...
There is this tension between, on the one hand, you want to warn people in advance just how dangerous it is, just how slippery a slope it is, how hard it is to return, so that they don't go down. You don't want a person taking a couple steps. And in a sense, I'd rather go overboard. And I think the psukim go overboard in that direction. It's more important to be extreme in warning people just how dangerous that path is, just how hard to nearly impossible it is to return once you take a step in that direction. Well, you know, I'll take her a Pesach Besa. Don't even go near her. Don't go near her house. And no Magalasel, her paths are moving. It's falling down. And Kobayelo Yeshuvun, that's like the Mishle for sure emphasizes that side. It's way more important to warn people about going down that path. More important than emphasizing that once you're down that path and you've really betrayed God, that there is a way back. So look, you have these psukim. The psukim are here, these five psukim. This is the end of the act. I don't think there's anything more here about how you do tshuva. So you have a few psukim about how you could do tshuva once you betrayed God. Because you don't want the person who has betrayed God to think that there is no hope. There is always hope, and you want them to know that there is. But in general, the emphasis is far and away in appreciating, not to emphasize that you can always do tshuva. That is not the derech over here. The derech over here is to show people you're not really going to be able to do tshuva. Emphasize the fact that tshuva becomes nearly impossible, and do not emphasize the fact that it's always possible to do tshuva. Theoretically, yes. Practically, no. No, you're not going to do tshuva. You're going to lose your entire life, and you're going to get sucked up to the grave, and it's going to finish off your existence. It'll be terrible. That's the emphasis here, because you're trying to save people from going down this path, one in a million return. You know, it's not something that's common or easy, but it's possible, and this is the way you do it. You got to really humble yourself, break yourself, become like a threshold where people step on you. You basically completely remove your ego. And it is, for a person who breaks from the Torah, that's a difficult thing to break from the Torah. That's not an easy psychological thing to do. But far more difficult is once you've broken from the Torah and you've overcome that, that there is a momentum to stay within the framework of the Torah. Your friends, your family, there's how you were raised, Eishes Nirech. It's not easy. You know, that's not an easy thing to do either. Once a person does and he goes to the Eishes zone and he follows that and he goes down that path, he's with the Minim, and then for him to say, you know what, I was wrong about leaving the Torah. I was wrong about abandoning God. I betrayed God. I made a mistake. And he wants to come back and ask people to daven for him. That is such a humiliation to his ego. It is such an unbelievably difficult thing for a person to do. Far more difficult than the initial betrayal of the Torah. It is to say you made a mistake and you want God to accept you back, and you have to go to people. And that's like so hard to do. I don't want to say it's impossible, but very difficult. That is the way back. Complete humiliation, breakdown of the total ego, asking people to daven for you. That's the only way back. But, you know, that's not easy. So it exists, but it's not easy. Okay, so let me just try to tie it all together now. These three different cases. Okay, so the cases, one is this case of the person who went to Minas and now he wants to return to God. Then you have the case of the person who insulted his friend and he wants his friend to forgive him. And then you have the first case of the guarantee of a loan. Okay, so I'd say that all three cases have something in common, okay, why they're being put together. Obviously, in the pshat, you have to explain what's the combination of these two, why Shlomo is intertwining these two sins of insulting your friend and the loan. And then when you see the commonality of those two, you'll see it applies to the mashal also. So it's not just, it's really beautiful way it works together. Okay, so Okay, so the first thing they all have in common, I think, is let's just deal with the pshat for a second. Okay, the loan and the insulting your friend. So they're both sins that are very easy to do. I shouldn't say sins because the loan is not a sin quite. It's just a mistake. It's a mistake that people make. So they're mistakes that people make, and they're very easy to make because in the beginning it seems like it's like a little nothing. You say something to your friend, and like you're just making a joke. You don't. It's just a word. It was just something you said. You said it's very easy to insult somebody, say something wrong at the wrong time. You weren't thinking, you weren't sensitive. It was just a word. It wasn't a big deal. And the same thing with a loan, you're guaranteeing a loan to somebody. A person, you know, they make guarantees. It's like very easy to fool yourself into thinking that, you know, you're not spending any money. You're just guaranteeing it something. Your buddy's good for the money. He's going to pay it back. He just needs somebody to sign on the loan to guarantee it because of whatever reason his credit isn't great. I don't know why. He's a trustworthy guy. So you want to guarantee it. But you don't think when you're making the guarantee that you're going to have to pay for it. Right? You're not really, you know, there's a certain lack of das. It's not so easy. You have to work out the das of an arev. He doesn't really think in a certain sense that he's going to have to pay for the loan. You know, it's like the government, you know, the U.S. government. In 2008, 2009, they were guaranteeing student loans and guaranteeing, all the mortgage-backed securities. And government loves to make guarantees because it doesn't cost anything, right? And it doesn't, it's free. Guarantees are free. Guaranteed trillions of dollars of loans the government loves to do, brings down the interest rates on everything. Everybody loves it. Everybody loves student loans. They're so low. And what's the big deal? Government guarantees doesn't cost anything. Doesn't come out of the budget. But it's a mistake because, you know, these loans, eventually, they come due. There's a reason why the creditor wants the guarantor, because there are times, now, sometimes you don't need the guarantor, but often enough, the lender defaults and the guarantor is on the hook. Okay, but you don't think about that as a guarantor. It's very easy. It's something it's very easy to get into, and you don't appreciate the full consequences. The same thing when you insult your friend. You're saying something that's very easy to do, to make a comment or whatever it is, and you don't appreciate the consequence that comment has the ability to wreck the entire relationship. Okay. Likewise, with the minas and the isha zara, you think it's just a one-time thing. If you remember from Perek Aleph, the gang, they said, "Run with us! Come on, come with us! Join us on our side!" You know, and if you want, you can split. You can whatever portion is. You know, betray the Torah. And you're going to get some one-time thing, just ask you to do it one time, write some article for us, or just do one thing. And you'll get some pleasure, get some anah, some enjoyment from the whole thing. And it's just a one-time thing. And if you want, you could stay with us, or you could just go back to the Torah. It's up to you. You'll decide. So it's a kind of thing that a person thinks, betraying the Torah. It's something you think you can do once. It's so easy. It's in the moment, the emotion's there. It's just tempting what's going to happen. And you don't appreciate the long-term consequences. How it really ruins your relationship with the Torah, with Hashem, the guilt and the shame that's associated with it makes it conflict, and you never really can get it out of your head. It's the kind of thing that you think you do once and you don't appreciate the long-term consequences. Okay, that Minas has that same phenomenon of you're getting in deep, you're getting in on something, a path that's going somewhere, and you don't realize, you think you're just taking one or two steps. Okay, the same thing with the person making guaranteeing the loan, thinks he's just making a guarantee, big deal, doesn't realize the long-term consequences, financial consequences for himself. Same thing when a person insults his friend, he's making a joke, whatever, in the moment, doesn't realize this has the potential to wreck the whole relationship. Okay. The second thing I think that all these things have in common is that that all three of them have the potential to spiral out of control if you don't deal with them right away. Okay, so we developed in the very beginning of the with your friend. If you insult them and you let that relationship fester, the relationship could really deteriorate to the point where apologizing isn't even going to work. That we spoke about in the beginning. But I think the same thing with the loan. You know, the person, when all of a sudden the creditor comes after you, says, "Hey, your buddy defaulted. You pay me." If you don't pay him right away, he's going to come up after you. He puts a lien on your house, puts a lien on your business, on your car, whatever it is. And you think, "I'm not paying this guy. I didn't make the loan. I didn't borrow anything. I go after him. He's the one who borrowed the money. Why should I borrow it?" You know, and they could really ruin your life. Your credit score gets destroyed. It deteriorates. And at the end of the day, you're going to have to pay it anyway. So you're just going to end up ruining your reputation is going to get ruined. Your financial situation is going to get ruined if you drag it on. basically what you have to realize, if you guaranteed a loan and that guarantee comes due because your friend defaults, you got to suck it up and, as Rashi say, lechis rapes, right? Open up, hati lo pas yad l'shalom amono. Pay the guy. Because the bottom line is you owe the guy the money. Yes, you feel like you didn't borrow the money from him. Your friend borrowed the money. Why should you be paying him? Because you're the idiot who signed on the dotted line and you're the one who guaranteed it. And don't make excuses. The longer you drag it on, the more trouble you're going to be in, to the point where you can end up letting this guarantee not just cost you money. It can cost you your credit. It can cost you your reputation. It can cost you your house. It can get the interest keeps building. It's the kind of thing that can wreck your life if you don't deal with it right away. Same thing with your friend, right? If you let it drag on, if the relationship will be completely ruined, apologize as soon as reasonably possible. And the same thing with the minas, the same point we were discussing obviously at length, is that as soon as if you make that mistake and you abandon the Torah and you do something that, you know, you shouldn't, hang out with the minim, you go to their side, you slip up, you've got to realize this is not something that the sooner you deal with it, the more possible it is to deal with. And if you let it build and you keep building, you become entrenched in the way of life of the minas. Your identity becomes one of having left the Torah, and your ego will prevent you from going back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the longer it goes, the more difficult it becomes. And therefore, it's exactly like the other two things, where you don't appreciate the long-term consequences. And once you make the mistake and, you know, the bill comes due, you do tshuva right away. Return as soon as possible. Don't let things get out of control to the point where they're no longer able to be fixed.